The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Thanks to SpiritMotorGroup.ie. With secure online payments, buying your next used car has never been easier. With Spirit Motor Group.
Now, as we prepare to enter phase two of the government's roadmap to reopening the economy, are the public health authorities doing a good job of handling it all? There was talk of scrapping coronavirus travel restrictions 3 weeks early. That no longer seems likely, leaving a lot of people feeling disheartened. Politicians have raised issues about reducing the 2 metre rule to one and shortening the length of time it would take to reopen the economy. But should public health advice be left to the experts and not the politicians? Pharmacist and former Fine Gael TD Kate O'Connell is joining us, and columnist with the Irish Independent Ian O'Doherty is on the line. Good morning to you both. First of all, Ian, what's your take on this? Because the politicians are constantly saying we observe the public health advice.
Well, the clue's in the title, public health advice, not public policy. Excuse me. I think by and large, and it's become increasingly obvious over the last month or so that the main public health advisors, whatever, I mean, they're doing the best they can. But the thing is, they are what I would call narrowcasters, and that it's not their job to take a broader picture of the economy and things like that. And I think really what's been so frustrating is that the government have completely outsourced all their sense of responsibility to people who, if they could, would basically have us all living inside and never leaving the house anyway. And that's one of the things, if I was one of the public health officials, I'd be very worried, because it looks almost as if certain politicians are just setting the scientists up for the fall, if you like, because public patience is beginning to run thin. We were all very good at the start, and I've been a consistent supporter of the lockdown. And anybody with any common sense has realised that this had to be done. But the thing is, anybody with any common sense can actually look at a situation as it's evolving and begin to realise that we need to kind of change our policies. And I don't want, with the best will in the world, I don't want any unelected official, no matter how good or how novel they are, deciding the entirety of public policy. I mean, the thing that worries me is that here are the facts. We're looking at a €300 billion deficit for this year. We're looking at 25% unemployment. We're looking at about 250,000 people are going to be unemployed. And for those of us who are looking, or for those people who are looking up to keep their jobs, they're looking at an average of 10% drop in their income. Now, if we were to keep this lockdown going for much longer, those facts and figures would be worse. So the one thing I would say about the scientists seem to have an awful lot of groupies on social media now. It's amazing. Like, you say one thing and they go, believe the science, listen to the scientists. But why don't we listen to the WHO scientists who say that we can reduce the social distancing rule down to 1 metre?
No, they don't, you see, Ian. That's the point. They say the social distance should be at least 1 metre. And people like Luke O'Neill says, you know, when you're out of doors and the wind is whistling around you, 1 metre is fine. If you're indoors and you're breathing at each other intimately in a small room, well, maybe 2 metres will protect you better.
It's a risk.
Semantic. You know,
it's semantics on your part, because I mean, there's over a half dozen countries in the EU are now using the 1 metre rule, right? So the thing is, you have healthcare professionals in Irish hospitals saying that actually that would increase capacity and stuff like that. So I mean, there's perfectly good arguments for it. But the thing is, we're not hearing these arguments. We're just hearing the diktats instead. And again, I do have sympathy for the O'Neills and the Holhams and the McConkeys, because I do feel that basically the government are kind of pushing them out into the forefront. So they've become the public focus. I mean, have you noticed that? I mean, Flacker's been very quiet of late, you know? And so There is this sense that basically, when you're taking academics out of the academic sphere and placing them into the rather more red-blooded, cutthroat world of politics, they're the ones, it's the public health official ones are the ones who are going to be blamed by the public when patience really runs out on this, you know? I would say for those people who say that, you know, we need to carry this on, I mean, anybody who wants this lockdown to continue in the current state, you've lost your right to complain about the health service, you've lost your right to complain about housing or homelessness, because the only way we will ever sort any of these problems out is with money coming into the exchequer from an economy that's actually functioning. You can't put an economy...
Just to clarify a figure, you said we'd have a €300 billion deficit. It'll be a €30 billion max deficit, they're saying. But of course, we have the existing debt of hundreds of billions, which will also be carried forward. Just wanted to make that clear. Kate O'Connell, what's your take on this? Are we best to follow the advice of the health experts, or should the politicians, you know, weigh everything up? The broader view, the economy, the damage done, the tax foregone, all of that.
Well, and this is one of those unique cases where the experts just have to be listened to. And in terms of what would be argued as the broader view, what is the broader view? Who are we trying to appease with the broader view? Nothing has changed since the start of this pandemic in the Irish terms, in the sense that we know very little more about the virus in terms of treating it, and we do know how it is transmitted, and we have managed to ourselves control it by reducing how it spreads in our community. And all of that information has come from years and years of virology research that has led us to the knowns in this situation. But the unknowns still remain. And what the experts have done, and I believe very well, has have had public health to the core and to the fore when it comes to their role. And the role of Tony Holohan and his team is to protect public health. That is why people like this go into that job. They're experienced, they have no vested interests, and I suppose essentially they're not looking for votes, they're looking to save lives. So I think it is key that we listen to public health experts.
But here's the rub, Kate. You can be absolutely conservative and therefore maximise the lives saved, minimise the lives lost by being utterly conservative. And someone said on these airwaves not so long ago, you could reduce the speed limit to 5 miles an hour and you won't have a road traffic death. So there is always a balancing of risk. What do you say to that argument that perhaps if you open up more quickly, yes, more people might get sick, a few, but there are other people who are going to get sick if they don't get to their specialist in time, which they can't do at the moment?
Of course it is a balance of risk and done. And of course the plan has to be agile. And as we're coming out of the lockdown, we need to learn from what we did when we were going into it by reducing communication, reducing the clusters that we saw. We have no replication of like people who work in nursing homes, people in meat factories, healthcare workers. We have seen how this virus transmits between those groups and how it can have a knock-on effect into other groups and how when the virus moves, it can be indiscriminate and can cause huge harm and often death. But what has to be remembered at the end point of all this, if someone's actions are, I suppose, jumping the gun to some extent, and there is a surge in transmission, the person who has to deal with that sick person and deal with them in intensive care and give them the specialist treatment are healthcare professionals. It is not fair to overwhelm our healthcare professionals in the hospital setting with a burden of disease coming in that could ordinarily be treated if it had been be controlled. Yes, but the plan needs to be agile. The plan needs to look at what has worked in terms of reducing transmission. And of course, because this is new, and this is new to us as a country, we have to look at what has worked in terms of reducing transmission, such as the 2 metre, such as perhaps the wearing of face masks, intensive hand washing, and that whole reduction in social distancing. It would be lovely if we could move from a 2 metre to a 1 metre. All of these things are aspirational, and I would prefer to be working in that environment and living in that environment. But what we want and hope for are different things to what the evidence is showing, that this disease is still very much with us. It is still as virulent as it always was, and we are still unable to cure it.
Some of the comments coming in, well said to Ian O'Doherty. I'm genuinely heartened that at least one commentator hasn't totally lost all balance. Thanks for having him on. That's Seamus and Gorey. But John in Wexford says, at 1 metre distance, you're 80% safe. Reduce it from 2 metres to 1 metre and you more than double your chances of catching it. That's if the other person is spewing out COVID-19 or coronavirus in their breath, never mind coughing and sneezing. Someone else points out, in those European countries that are opening up, the wearing of masks is compulsory, not like here. I seem to be the only one wearing a mask. This one, government doesn't heed health advice on travel to and from the UK. What's the point in all of us staying local while plane loads truck in from the worst performer on the virus? Purely political considerations. Well, over 50,000 people have died in the United Kingdom. So even though they have a population which is, less than a quarter of that of the United States, their rate of death is more than half that of the United States. So they're not a good performer. They're our nearest neighbour. And also, you may have read something this morning about Portugal. They're having discussions with Portugal to try and form an air bridge so that people could go from the UK on their holidays to Portugal. Are the Portuguese mad to take people from the epicentre of European infection and allow them to go on holidays? Crazy, crazy stuff. Anyway, Ian, your response to what Kate's been saying.
Well, no, I see where she's coming from. But, I mean, one of the things about the reducing the social distance down to 1 metre, I mean, I think it would be a good idea to follow suit and do what the other countries are doing and basically make wearing a mask outside mandatory. You see, look, the problem with this is that everybody knows we're in trouble. Everybody understands that we had to go through the lockdown. Everybody knows that we have to come out of it, but nobody really knows how and when. And the only, this is one of those strange things where, and I've always argued against sort of politicising the virus because there's been various different sort of pressure groups have been trying to use it to get to grind their own axes. What I do think is that we need to stop the absolute sort of blind obedience to diktats from public health officials. And that's in no way meant as an insult to them. It's just, as a journalist, it's my job to question things. And I do find that we've, this COVID-19 has ushered us into this really strange era where you're not allowed to sort of question authority because, you know, at the start of all of this from, say, you know, the middle of March to the middle of April, all you'd hear is that anytime somebody would raise any sort of a dissenting voice or just merely ask a question, you'd be told to sit down, shut up, and basically if it saves one life, well, then it'll be worth it. Now, what's interesting is that mantra hasn't been heard in the letters pages of newspapers or on radios. That mantra of if it saves just one life, it'll be worth it, hasn't been heard nearly as much in the last few weeks because the reality of the lockdown is beginning to kick in. And another point that what I think one of your callers texted in, whatever, you know, there's people missing cancer tests. There's people missing major operations. In England, there's one school of thought that says, you know, about half as many people will die unnecessarily because of corona. So these are all questions that need to be asked. And now the interesting quandary then is, does anybody have any rational answers? But when you see the fact that there are different countries around the EU, and I'm not including the UK in this because they've been pretty disastrous, but there have been different countries around the EU, and they're responding to things in a different way. So, I mean, it's not being completely psychotic to basically say, let's have a look at how some of the other countries are doing this, and let's have a listen to some of the scientists from the other countries who are doing this.
Okay, here's a comment from Tony. I'll put this to Kate. You listen to the medical experts if you're a teacher or a civil servant. If you're a person depending on their work to eat, you want to get back to work. That's a fair comment from Tony, isn't it, Kate?
Of course, and there are huge challenges out there in terms of people getting back to work and earning a wage and keeping their businesses alive. And any delay makes it much more complicated for those businesses. But the impact of making uninformed decisions and non-evidence-based moves based on lobbying or pressures from certain interest groups is not the way forward here. The key focus has to be the protection of public health. And you might say, or you might say, oh, that's one more life saved. This is a vicious virus that is indiscriminate in its attack, and it requires treatment, often requires intensive care. And we have to have the capacity in our system to treat our citizens to the best possible level in order to save as many lives. And notwithstanding all the long-term and chronic impacts of the disease can have on people going forward. So while I understand what Ian is saying, any, I suppose, move based on non-evidence, non-evidence base, it's it would be very, very hard for any politician or expert to stand over. And I do think there has been huge questioning. You hear this idea that, oh, you're not allowed to ask any questions. Because this is a global phenomenon, there are scientists all over the world working on the data, working on what we know, working on what can be done, the prospects of a vaccine, the prospects of antibody presence. There is huge work being done on this, and it is informed
We cover all of that regularly on the show, Kate, to keep our listeners informed. And happily, they are very well informed on all the scientific developments. Thanks to Professor Luke O'Neill.
And that is one of the great achievements of this. I think is that the amount of information that is out there, good information, and a realization that we need to depend on proper information.
We have to leave it there. Kate O'Connell and Ian O'Doherty, thank you very much for joining us.